This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another hour of old-time radio crime. We'll hear first this time from The Silent Men, an episode titled The Roping of Joe Landis, first aired November 25th, 1951. And it's Richard Diamond, private detective, in the Pete Rocco case, his episode from October 4th, 1950.
The radio network is now entering its second quarter century as the leader in radio programming. Now it's The Silent Men on NBC. The Silent Men, starring Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. National Broadcasting Company proudly presents Douglas Fairbanks in The Silent Men, transcribed stories of the undercover operations of the special agents of every branch of our federal government and their relentless fight against crime. Now here is Douglas Fairbanks.
One of the prime requisites of a federal special agent is a thorough knowledge of undercover work. There are times when an agent must be able to transform himself into a convincing criminal. He must know the habits of the underworld, the talk, the psychology, and the modus operandi of the habitual criminal. On his ability to fit himself into any situation and to assume any role necessary, an agent's life may, and often does, depend. In tonight's file case, in which I play the part of Special Agent Tom Brackett, such an undercover operation was required. It is entitled, The Roping of Joe Landis. Word had come in from our San Francisco field office of an unusual bargain sale out on the coast. Somebody was selling counterfeit $20 bills for two. As soon as the bills broke, Jim Curtis flew out from Washington. 5 weeks later, I received orders to join him. I'd been told that District Chief Mike King would be waiting for me at the airport. He wasn't, so I got to a phone booth. Who is this, please?
What number are you calling?
Isn't this a federal building?
That's right. What department did you want?
Is this the department that investigates things for the government?
Would you mind stating your name, please?
I just wanted a little information.
Yes?
It's about money. Counterfeit money. I wanted to know how you can tell if it's being passed.
Oh, I see. Hold on a minute.
What are you trying to do? Record this conversation?
Will you repeat that?
I said you're going to record this conversation and then you're going to have this call traced, aren't you? I can save you the trouble, Chief. I'm calling you from a phone booth at the airport. Where you were supposed to meet me.
Brackett! Oh, Brackett, you screwball. Get yourself a cab and come on down to the office right away.
Right. Ah, that was quite a line of double talk you were dishing out, Chief. Is that SOP now for all telephone calls?
Right out of the manual. Tell them nothing until they know who they are and why they want to know it.
Where's Jim Curtis? I thought he'd be here.
Yeah, you're meeting him later on.
Here?
No. Jim's a working man now. He's gone into the printing supply business.
A plant?
That's a good way to know a lot of printers and engravers.
I think this stuff's being printed here in San Francisco, then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Here, you take a look at one of the bills they're passing.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good, Chief. The engraver knew his business. A portrait of Jackson's a honey.
The color's a little light, though, especially the green.
Yeah, I noticed that. The serial numbers are sloppy. Printed typographically?
Yeah, the last two serial numbers and the letter A are blurred on some of the notes. Not all of them, though.
How many broke here in San Francisco?
32 that were passed here in town the last 5 weeks.
32 in 5 weeks? Sounds like a small operation.
We've reason to believe this has only been a trial run.
Just getting ready for the big push, eh?
Mm-hmm. We've been testing this, huh?
Any leads?
Well, Curtis will bring you up to date. He'll be waiting for you in his car in front of Pier 16 down at the waterfront.
Okay.
Well, this shouldn't take long. All I want is the name of the people who are passing the queer, the location of the place that's being printed, the name of the engraver, and the plate to convict him with.
And the plates. Always the plates.
Within an hour, I was heading for my appointment with Jim Curtis. It was damp and foggy, as only the San Francisco waterfront can be foggy. Curtis saw me first.
Hey, over here, Tom, in the car.
Hi.
Welcome to San Francisco, Mr. Brack.
Huh. You sound like the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, sure, I'm a solid citizen now. Chief, tell you about my dad?
Selling printing supplies, isn't it?
Yeah. You know what? I'm quite a sell.
Anything promising?
I'm kind of interested in a guy who runs a small plant. Got friendly with him, found out he's not adverse to making a fast buck. Said he'd print phony whiskey labels if I knew where to sell them. So I ran a make on him.
What'd you find out?
Name is Landis, Joe Landis. Was a top engraver in New York some years ago.
Found anything to tie him in with the bad notes?
Well, not exactly. He steers away every time I bring the matter up. But he's moved his plant 3 times in the last 4 months, and some of the 20s always show up somewhere near his shop.
Well, it certainly seems to be worth a little undivided attention. Where do I fit in?
Well, now, look, I've told him about you coming out here. You're supposed to be a guy I work for back east, man with a big bankroll looking for a profitable investment.
Oh.
Not necessarily legitimate one. He's more than willing to meet.
Oh, what name do I use?
Your own.
Good. When do I meet him?
I'll bring him up to your hotel tomorrow afternoon, Tom.
Where are we heading now?
Oh, got a little job to do. Landis moved to his shop today, and I thought we might as well take a look at the place he moved from. Never can tell what he might have left behind, you know.
Well, it's worth a try.
Let us stop here and walk. Take this flashlight with you.
Sure.
Got a gun?
Not with me. Think I'll need one?
You never know. He's a mild little guy, this Landis, but you never know. That is it. I think we'd better go around back. Be an easier door to open. How are you on lock?
Not too good. No problem. It's unlocked.
Mm. Sure didn't do much of a cleanup yet.
Hold the light on this carton of junk here, will you? I'm going to empty it.
All right.
Bits of scrap metal, some lead type.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's something. Feel this paper.
Hey, you can print money on this stuff. Jim, look. There's another piece with numbers on it. Looks like they were running a proof. 49A.
All right, let me see that, Tom. 49A. Brother, maybe we got something. 49A, that's the last 3 figures on the serial number of the phony bill.
Quiet. Someone's at the door.
Let's get out of here. Beat it, Tommy. You're on your own.
Right. See you tomorrow. I registered at the Vendome, a downtown hotel that caters to men of dubious occupation. I spent the next couple of hours at the bar downstairs establishing myself as a visiting Easterner who had some money to throw around. The next day, I followed the same procedure. About 2 o'clock, I went up to my room to change. Shortly after, there was a knock on my door.
Who's there?
Curtis. Jim Curtis.
Jim, nice to see you. Come in.
Oh. Heard you got in, so I thought I'd come up and say hello. There's a friend of mine, Tom. Joe Landis, Mr. Tom Brackett.
Oh, I'm glad to know you, Joe.
I'm happy to know you.
Sit down, man. I'll fix your drink.
Not for me, please. My wife insisted I don't drink during the day.
Jim?
Yeah, sure, I'll have one. I'm still single.
Okay.
Joe here's a printer, Tom, and a good one. I told him that, most likely you could throw some work his way.
Well, I can use a good printer.
I do good work, Mr. Brackett. Very good work.
Here's your drink, Jim.
Oh, thanks.
Can I talk to you straight, Landis?
Yes.
You think I'd have brought him up here if you couldn't, Tom?
I just wanted to be sure. This job I have for you, Landis, is, a little, unorthodox, if you know what I mean.
Perhaps I should make myself clear at this point, Mr. Brackett. I'm a printer and engraver, and that's all. So if you have anything in mind that's not good printing practice, And I'm afraid Jim here may have given you the wrong impression.
What kind of talk is this, Curtis? You know my type of operation. What'd you bring him up here for?
I'll get him myself. Joe, you told me...
I told you nothing. He said your friend might throw some work my way. Well, I need work badly, but not the kind he had in mind.
What kind of a steer was this, Jim? You know I don't have time to waste on things like this.
Nice to have met you, Mr. Brackett. But there's no need for me to stay. My wife is waiting for me. She's a very excitable woman, and if I keep her waiting 10 minutes, she... Well, you know the way some women are.
Look, Landis, I don't get
it. I'll say good afternoon, gentlemen. I must get back.
Okay, Landis. Jim, you stay. I want to talk with you. Boy, did you ever louse me up.
Well, now, Joe here isn't the only printer in town,
good
you know.
Good afternoon. Ugh. After finding that proof sheet with the serial numbers last night, after him asking me to peddle bootleg whiskey labels for him, he pulled the Righteous Indignation Act.
I don't know. He was watching me pretty closely. Something might have made him suspicious.
Why did he come at all?
Maybe to look me over. If Landis is our man, he'll be checking up on me. And if he's satisfied, a mountain will come to Mohammed.
Yeah, okay. See you later, Mohammed.
I spent a pleasant, though expensive, few days making the rounds of the bars. I bought a lot of drinks and I talked to a lot of characters. But more important, I established a personality for Tom Brackett, East Coast operator. Not being used to such lush living, I finished up Sunday night with a floating headache. I slept till late afternoon the next day. I was coming out of the shower when the phone rang. Hello?
Brackett?
This is Brackett.
Joe Landis talking.
Landis? Oh, yeah. The man who was in to see me last week.
I'd like to talk with you. I'm here in the hotel.
Sure, come on up to my room.
I'm downstairs at the bar. How about joining me there?
More privacy in my room.
And if you don't mind, I'd rather you came down.
All right. No difference to me.
You'll be alone, won't you?
All alone.
Hello, Mr. Brackett. Sit down.
Well, nice cozy little corner you picked, Landis.
We can be alone and at the same time see what's going on.
Why wouldn't you come up to the room? Afraid of something?
No offense, Mr. Brackett. My wife helped plan the little thing, and she thought it'd be better this way. I would have called you sooner, but we've been a little upset about your friend Curtis.
I hardly call him a friend. What's he done to upset you?
The missus is certain that he's an informer for the police.
Could be. Haven't seen him for nearly 3 years. What makes you think so?
We moved our plant last week. And the next night, my wife went down to see if we'd left anything important behind. When she got there, she surprised a man inside the building. She saw him. It was Jim Curtis.
She's positive?
Yes. He found something that had dropped out of his pocket. Absolute identification.
When was this?
Night before we came to see you. That's why I wouldn't talk in front of him.
Good idea. I'll check on him. If what you say is true, well...
I understand that you're looking for investment.
That's right.
And that you have the necessary cash to close the deal that looks good to you.
Let's cut out the oratory, Landis. What's on your mind?
Well, it's this way. Supposing I had some friends, very clever ones, who could turn out an excellent copy of a $20 bill...
I'd like to see one so I could judge for myself.
Supposing you could buy these bills for $10 a hundred.
I'd still want to see the stuff.
Reach under the table.
What?
You have it?
Yeah.
Careful how you hold it. Don't let it be seen.
And your friends aren't as clever as you think. Colors are too light. Serial numbers too heavy. Last two numbers in the A are out of line.
He's passed more than 70 of these with no trouble.
This queer would have to be taken out of the country, maybe Mexico. If I handle this stuff at all, it's as a dealer.
My friends would be very amenable to this. However, I would have to discuss our little talk with them. You handle this merchandise?
Yeah, at a price. I'll keep this sample.
Oh, no. Gladys, that's my wife. You wouldn't think of it.
All right. But tell your friends I don't buy till I see all of it. And the plate, too. I want a guarantee of future delivery.
The plate? I hardly think so.
That's the only way I'll know that I'm dealing direct. I'm not interested in working through jobbers.
I'll tell them. And you take care of Curtis?
I'll do a little checking first. If you're right, good. When I got back to my room, I called the chief. He arranged a meeting that night between Curtis, myself, and him at Golden Gate Park. I took a roundabout route, checking carefully to see that I wasn't being followed. I found them there, sitting on a bench.
Hi, Chief.
Move over.
How's it feel to be one of the most publicized crooks that hit San Francisco in a good many years?
Oh, it's paid off. There's no doubt that Landis checked on me before he made the contact.
Yeah, he must have. All right, let's have it.
There's someone else in it with him, too. Sounds like a small operation. I gather his wife knows about it and is more than a little nervous about the whole thing.
Well, maybe we can prescribe a sedative.
You get to see one of the bills?
Yeah, but he wouldn't let me keep it.
When did you see him again?
He said he'd call me. We've hit a snag, Chief. Mrs. Landis saw Curtis leaving the old print shop last week, the night we found the proof sheet.
Not bad. She parked it.
Landis tells me she's got absolute proof.
Huh? What kind of proof?
I don't know. I didn't want to press too hard.
Well, that makes a tough term. You have to move fast. Force the shooter.
Yeah. Did the boys on the stakeout get anything new today?
Descriptions of a few people going into Landis' shop. One of them was Ed McLoy. Frequent boarder at some of our better prisons.
Hey, tell him about the Navy, Chief. Damn, we got the whole U.S. Navy working on this one.
The Navy?
Yeah, I was coming around to that. This afternoon, Mrs. Landis came out of the alley with a package wrapped in newspaper. She drove to the Oakland Bridge, stopped the car, and threw the package into the water. We want that package, so we called in the Navy.
Well, what can they do about it?
They're sending divers down in the morning to try and find it. But come on, let's drive out now and see how they're doing. I got to talk to Lieutenant Saunders. He's in charge.
Think they'll find it? It's a big ocean.
Yeah, it's a big Navy.
Glad you got here, Chief. Just got word from meteorological boys. They've marked out five areas in which the package might be found.
Well, how in the world did they figure that out, Lieutenant?
Sort of naval magic, you might call it. Huh. We have the spot from which it was dropped. They've taken the estimated weight of the package, the wind velocity, speed of the ocean currents, and the topography of the ocean bottom.
And they added, subtracted, and multiplied, and the answer is five areas to search.
Yes. Can't say that I anticipate success, Mr. King, but my divers can use the practice.
Well, when will you know?
Late tomorrow afternoon. Should be finished by then.
One thing, Chief.
Yes, Tom.
On what did you base the estimated weight of the package?
On the weight of a set of zinc plates. That's what I think the lady was anxious to get rid of. And as I told you...
We know. You want those plates.
I spent the next day in my room waiting for Landis to call. When he hadn't, by 6 o'clock, I was sure something had gone wrong. I was about to contact the chief and tell him so when the telephone rang. I let it ring again. Yeah?
Landis.
Who?
Joe Landis.
Oh, yeah.
Have you got enough cash to close a deal tonight?
Yeah. If we make a deal.
All right. What kind of suit you wearing?
Brown tweed. Why?
Hat?
Light tan.
Be in front of the merchant building at 7 o'clock. Stand at the curb, and a light panel truck will stop and ask you if you want to lift. You ask how far they're going, and if they say McLoy Hotel, it's all right. Come alone. If there's anyone with you, they won't stop.
All right, but it's got to be done tonight. I'm leaving town in the morning.
It'll be done tonight.
I stood in front of the merchant's building and waited. Climax was shaping up, and I felt the tingling excitement that always hits me when I get close to the final big play. It's an excitement that has a little fear in it, too. I reminded myself that Joe Landis, for all his pleasant face and soft talk, could and would use a gun if he had to. Ed McCloy picked me up as scheduled and drove me to a little print shop on 10th.
You made it all right?
Joe, I don't like this.
Oh, Mr. Brackett, this is my wife.
How do you do? Always work this late, Joe?
Some handbills to get out. Grocery store on the corner. Weekend specials.
You can finish that later. Shut it off, Joe.
I look better if the press was working while we talk. Just in case someone...
Turn the thing off. We're all right.
What did you use it for, Joe? Lots of printers make good livings. Just...
Joe, tell her to keep quiet, will you? Now, turn the thing off.
Baby, you've got to stop worrying.
Let's get down to business.
All right. Joe tells me you're interested in $100,000.
Yeah, at a price. Let's see him.
Don't do it, Joe. I got a feeling about this, a bad feeling. It's driving me crazy. We'll burn it. Bring it all
up. This woman of yours gives me the willies,
Joe. We've got to have the money. They pull me in for writing bad checks. We've got to do it.
You go home and wait for Joe, Gladys. We don't need you.
I stay with Joe.
Let her be.
All right. Brackett, you ready to buy tonight?
That's what I'm here for, isn't it?
What was Jim Curtis doing in our shop? That's what I want to know.
Brackett said he'll handle Curtis Gladys. Now stop thinking about it.
Just give me the proof he was there.
And Gladys picked this up off the floor. Must have fallen out of his pocket.
Now, let's see it. Let me keep this. I can make good use of it.
I don't know. Should I, Ed?
Give it to him. All right, now about this deal.
I want to see the money. All of it.
It's hidden in the back room.
Come on, let's go. Okay, take a look. 7,000 genuine, and it's yours.
That's only because we need the money in a hurry. For future deliveries, we'll have to deal again.
It's a deal.
Give us the money and take it away.
You don't think I carry a roll like that with me, do you? You guys have been knocked off for a lot less. Now, it's in the vault at my hotel.
That's no good to us.
Joe, why don't you and me go home? McCly can handle it.
No, you go yourself. I want to be around when Ed gets the money, and I want my share.
If you stay, I stay.
Bring the notes to my hotel. I'll pay you there.
Uh-uh, no good.
We'll have the stuff in the car, and up will come a policeman. Joe, it isn't too late.
Oh, why don't you keep quiet? All right, now, here's how we'll work it. I'll go with you to your hotel, and you get the money. In the meantime, Joe will get a room for you in another hotel. You know which one, Joe.
Yeah, I know.
All right, when Joe calls us that everything's all right, we'll go there and close the deal.
That's all right with me. Now, Landis, let's see the plate.
I tell you, I got him, Mr. Brackett. Isn't that enough?
No.
Don't do it, Joe! Don't do it!
You've got to keep your voice down, Daddy.
I told you, Landis, I want to see those plates. If not, I don't buy. I've got to know you can keep on printing them.
All right, show them to him, Joe.
They're outside. I'll get them.
See, hides them in a garbage can. Made a false bottom. Keeps them there. Some of our competitors want them pretty bad, not to mention the police. They're valuable.
Yeah.
Joe's going to be surprised.
What about? What are you talking about now?
The plates. He isn't going to find them. Nobody's going to find them ever.
What? Where are they? Where'd you put them? Tell me or I'll...
We'll sell this one. Then we're through. Joe's a good engraver. He doesn't need this kind of work. You've got him into this.
Where are those plates?
A place where they'll do us no harm. At the bottom of the Pacific Ocean.
The chief's hunch had been a good one. Like he thought, the plates were somewhere on the ocean bottom near the Oakland Bridge. McCloy was furious, and for a moment I thought he was going to kill her. But Joe promised me that he could have another set of plates in 2 or 3 months. He'd made 2 sets of negatives and said he could turn out all the 20s I wanted. So I let myself be persuaded to go through with the deal. McCloy drove me to my hotel. After Landis called, I got my package of marked money and we drove to the Roxanne Hotel, a dirty little place near Chinatown. Landis and his wife were waiting for us. We had the lobby to ourselves. The clerk was conveniently absent.
Everything all right, McCloy?
Yeah, it seems to be.
Where's the stuff? Up in a room?
We didn't get a room. That's dangerous. We'll go out in the car and you follow us later. We'll blow the horn and you come outside. We'll switch packages. Then we can get away fast.
I'll wait here with Brackett. Keep him company.
Come on, Joe.
The Landises are what you might call cautious, eh?
Yeah, no guts. You know, with his talent, he could be worth $1 million. Now, that's it. Come on. I'll get in the car, too.
Here's the money. Quick!
I'll take that carton first.
All right, here it is. Now the money.
That man coming this way. It's that Curtis.
What?
Here's the money. It's all in this envelope.
There's another man with him now.
All right, step on it, Joe.
Hiya, Joe, Mrs. Landis.
We're in a hurry, Jim.
Get out of the car, all of you. Special agent, federal government.
He's got a gun.
Corey, I'll take your gun. Hand it over. Thanks.
All right, get them out of the car, Tom.
It's just like I said, Joe. You laughed at me.
I'm sorry, baby. I shouldn't have laughed.
All right, come along, folks. My boss wants to meet you downtown.
Yeah, sit down. We're going to have a little talk.
Don't you say anything, Joe. Nothing at all. You better let us go, mister. We know our constitutional rights.
Will you quote me the passage that gives you the right to process, manufacture, and distribute counterfeit money?
My husband's a printer. He rented his shop to Mr. McCloy. What he did there, we don't know.
Oh, that's interesting. And you've never met Special Agent Tom Brackett before, huh?
Never saw him in my life till he walked over to the car.
And you, McCloy, what have you got for us in the way of a yarn?
Me? I'm stupid. I know when I had it.
Well, back to you, Mrs. Landis. Our information is quite complete. Now, here's the way it reads. Joe Landis, one of the country's top engravers, designed and created a set of zinc plates for the manufacture of spurious $20 bills.
Joe never saw any plates, let alone designed them.
Well, a man of your husband's skill, Mrs. Landis, makes identification positive.
You've got no plates, so you can't prove it.
We've got the man you brought in to fix your offset press when it broke down. He saw a reverse plate of the bill on it, and he was doing his work.
And we've got the woman who was passing the bills for you.
We don't know what you're talking about. Without the plates...
The plates. They all know the importance of the plates. Mrs. Landis, I have news for you. I've got the plates.
I don't believe it. Joe!
Ask Lieutenant Saunders to come in, will you? Lieutenant Saunders, will you unwrap that package and explain to these people where and how you got it?
Joe!
This was found by Navy divers approximately 2,000 yards from the Oakland shore and 230 yards from the bridge.
And in case you need something more convincing, here are two sets of negatives, which are recovered from your shop.
They've got us, baby. They found the one square foot on the bottom of the Pacific Ocean that held them. And they've got it. By 10 o'clock the following night, Curtis and I were on a plane heading east.
What are you thinking about, Tom?
Joe Landis. A guy with his talent could make top wages, yet he preferred to work nearly 2 years on those plates, half-starving while he was doing it. Why?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe to prove that he's smarter than dumb klutz like us. Only you know something they never do.
Nice, mild-mannered fella like him. Why?
Well, let's leave it to the psychology professor. Me, I'm going to catch your wing.
You left something behind you the night we visited Landers' printing shop. That's how she knew you'd been there. Must have fallen out of your pocket.
Oh? Wonder what it was.
Just a piece of cardboard. Got it here.
Oh, let me take a look.
Better watch yourself for this. It's dangerous.
Oh, let's see it.
Here.
What do you know? Snapshot of me and the two kids. That was dumb of me. You know what?
What?
Marion's beginning to look more like a mother every day.
She's a honey.
Uh-huh.
This is Douglas Fairbanks again. The roping of Joe Landis closes another chapter in the distinguished chronicle of our silent men, the special agents of all branches of our federal government who daily risk their lives to protect the lives of all of us. Next week, we will tell you a story involving income tax evasion and wholesale murder in a file case entitled Death and Taxes, another venture undertaken for our protection by the Silent Men.
The Silent Men is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. Tonight's case was written by Lewis and Russoff and transcribed in Hollywood. Only the names and places were fictional. Douglas Fairbanks may currently be seen in the motion picture, Mr. Drake Duff.
Now, here again is Mr. Fairbanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the last 2 years, 2 million out of the 10 million civilian refugees in Korea have died of exposure or action of war. Please send any usable spare clothing and or blankets to American Relief for Korea, ARK, to Mass Best, Long Island, New York, or to St. Louis, Missouri, or Oakland, California. Please, and thank you.
Listen again next week and every week to other exciting cases involving the law enforcement adventures of the special agents of our federal government. For they are the Silent Men. The Silent Men has come to you from Hollywood Radio City. Now it's Tin Pan Valley on NBC. Listen, while the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Good evening. This is your Rexall family druggist speaking to you for the 10,000 independent druggists who have made the word Rexall part of our own store names and who recommend and sell the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company, like Rexall MI-31, for example, Rexall's popular and versatile mouthwash, gargle, and breath deodorant. Full-strength MI-31 kills contacted germs almost instantly, yet will not harm the delicate membranes of the mouth and throat. Ask for Rexall MI-31 at Rexall drugstores everywhere. And remember, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Now your Rexall family druggist brings you a transcribed half hour with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell. Town Detective Agency. I'll help you out if you're in trouble, but if it's a murder, it'll cost you double.
Rick.
Oh, hello, Helen, baby. What's new with the wealthy?
Not much. Only we had a date last night, remember?
Well, did we have fun?
Oh, loads. Only we'd had more fun if you'd shown up.
Now, Helen, don't overestimate me.
I don't.
No. Look, honey, I am sorry about last night. Set up with a sick aunt, you know.
Tender.
Well, don't you believe me?
No. Expect me to?
No.
Then we're even.
Hmm. Helen, I hate people who hold grudges. You busy tonight?
Uh-huh.
Well, doing what?
Oh, I'll probably end up listening to some idiot play the piano.
Hmm. Anyone I know?
Maybe. He's a little boy who never grew out of the cops and robbers stage.
Oh, yes. The good-looking one. He's the guy. Uh-oh. Client just walked in. I'll call you back and squirm later. Bye.
Diamond?
In the rough. What can I do for you?
You seen the morning papers?
Only the funnies.
Seen the story on page 2?
Now, what are you, a traveling quiz show?
Look at it.
Hmm. Pete Rocco broke out of prison.
That's right. You sent Pete up for murder. He always said he'd get out and take care of you.
Gee, I wish you hadn't cut my fingernails. I got nothing to chew.
You better find something. Pete's a nasty little boy.
Hmm. Well, what's all this to you?
My name's Danny. Danny Rocco. I'm Pete's brother.
Oh. Looking for a piece of cheese?
I found one. Get your hat, Shamus.
There was a bulge in Danny's coat pocket that hadn't come with a suit. Believing in the safety first slogan, I picked up my hat and was led to a car outside. We drove through town and then the Mulberry Street near Five Points to the section that used to be the heart of the city. We stopped in front of a cigar store.
Okay, Diamond, get out.
Oh, it's so comfortable here.
Come on, move.
Well, if you put it that way. Hmm, the Rocco Smoke Shop.
Yeah, it's mine.
Bet you sell opium.
In the back, behind those curtains. That's far enough. Ma! Hey, Ma!
I'm right here, Daniel. You know I don't like shouting.
Standing in the doorway was a little gray-haired old lady with a sweet, tired smile on her face. If this was Pete Rocco, he wore quite a disguise.
You, Richard Diamond?
I've given up denying it.
Sit down, please. Daniel, stop looking mean. Go outside and tend the shop.
Oh.
Daniel.
Okay, Ma.
Well, now I've seen everything.
Daniel's a good boy, Mr. Diamond. But one must be stern at times.
Oh, yes, one must.
You're probably wondering why I sent Daniel to bring you here.
Well, I have thought about it between prayers.
Mr. Diamond, I tried to raise my boys the best I could. Peter and Daniel had every chance for success, but Peter failed me. He killed a man.
Go on.
I trained my boys to be pickpockets. That was during their school days, of course.
Oh, yes, of course.
Later, I take them to a nice, tidy little bookmaking business. Like any mother, I wanted to keep them away from violence.
Very thoughtful.
Mrs. Diamond, I've known crime and criminals all my life. My husband was an immigrant. A criminal killed in a gang war. The only life I could teach them, but Peter failed me. Peter turned to murder.
Mrs. Rocco, this is very interesting, but why was I brought here?
I'm getting to that. Please be patient.
I'm sorry.
You see, as long as my boys stuck to bookmaking, I was happy. I was proud of them. But when Peter killed that man, he failed me.
You said that before.
Yeah, so I did. Mr. Diamond, you're the one who sent Peter to prison. Police couldn't catch him, but you did. I want you to send my boy back where he belongs. Behind bars.
I see.
I'll pay your usual fee. If Peter's out long, he might kill another man. I couldn't stand that. I don't hold with violence, Mr. Diamond.
There was a sad look on her face as she pushed the buzzer beside her chair. She was a proud little thing, but you could see the hurt in her eyes when she spoke of Pete. She was determined to have him put back in prison. After all, she'd only raised him to be a pickpocket. Ah, this modern generation. Absolutely no regard for their parents.
You'll ring for me, Ma?
Daniel, drive Mr. Diamond back to town. I'll watch the shop. Oh, dear. You haven't said that you'll take the job, have you, Mr. Diamond?
Ma would like for you to, Seamus.
Well, I...
Thank you so much. Daniel, you're looking mean again.
Danny drove me downtown. Instead of going to my office, I went to the 5th Precinct, where I found Sergeant Otis laboring over a crossword puzzle. Poor Otis. He couldn't find a four-letter word for something that swims, even if he hit him in the face with a herring. Well, hello, brainchild.
What? Oh, you.
Clever as always, I see.
Seamus, why don't you dig a hole and jump in it?
And disturb your wormy relatives? Oh, perish the thought.
Get lost.
My, I'd be touchy today.
Well, can't you see I'm working a puzzle?
See it? Yes. Believe it. That's another matter. Have it work on it, genius. I'm going to see Walt.
Oh.
Good afternoon, Lieutenant Lemonson. My, you look impressive with your feet on the desk. Saving shoe leather?
Rick, where have you been? I called you 50 times this morning.
Well, I've been chatting with a very pleasant little lady.
Blonde or brunette?
Neither. Her hair was gray.
Well, for you, that's a switch. But boy, you better go in hiding for a while. Pete Rocco's out of prison.
Yeah, so I heard. Is that why you called me?
Right. Rocco said he'd get you, and he's not the type to kid. He'll be looking for you, Rick.
Well, that's just Andy Walt, but I'll be looking for him.
What?
I've got a client wants Rocco back behind bars. Any idea where he is?
Not much to go on. He's here in town somewhere, that's for sure.
Why do you say that?
Well, remember that roll he took from that bookie before he plugged him?
Mm-hmm.
More than 50,000 bucks. He never would tell where he hid it.
Oh, yeah. You think he'll hang around long enough to dig it up and then go south, huh?
That's how it looks to me.
On the other hand, you might contact one of his old cronies here to get the dough and meet him somewhere else.
Maybe. But Pete wouldn't trust many people with 50,000.
Well, there was a guy named Roscoe Ward used to prowl around with Pete a lot. He's still around town?
Yeah, I got a location on him this morning. Seems he's a bowling fanatic.
Bowling?
Yep, hangs out in an alley around North Broadway. Joint called Atlas Alley.
Yeah, I know the place. Well, I think I'll get a little exercise.
Bowling, maybe?
Beat snooker. See you around, Walt. I drove up to the Atlas Alleys and parked in a lot across the street. The bowling fanatics were at it hot and heavy, and I sat down in one of the spectator seats. Half an hour later, a pale little punk came in, got an alley, and began bowling alone. I decided to join him, not because he looked lonely, but because his name happened to be Roscoe Ward. Well, hello, Roscoe.
Huh? Do I know you?
Well, I have the ugliest friends in town. Maybe you'd like to be one of them.
Sorry, I'm antisocial.
Mind if I bowl with him?
Yeah.
Thanks. I'll go first. Oh, I knocked them all down. Now, what will you play with?
Hey, that's not bad. You got a swell approach.
Thanks.
What's your pitch, anyway? What do you want from me?
I'd like to meet some of your friends, Roscoe.
Like I said before, a man is social.
So is your friend I want to meet. Just got back in town and won't let anyone see him.
What? Hey, now I remember you. The name's Diamond.
Good memory. Let's try it again. Know where Pete Rocco is?
So that's it, huh? But you better head for the Catskills. Word says that Petey's going to put a slug through your private eye.
Yeah, so I heard. I thought I'd look him up and beg for mercy or something.
Yeah, I bet. But sorry, I can't help you.
You'll look it.
But if I should see Pete, I'll tell him you was looking for him. Yeah, he'd get a big kick out of that. Now, beat it, leg man. I got a bowl.
Roscoe went back to his game and I left the alleys. The only thing I knew about Pete Rocco was that somewhere in this city of millions, he was waiting to kill yours truly. Not a pleasant thought, but then I'm not in the very pleasant business. I crossed the street to the parking lot and went to my car.
Hi, pal. Been waiting for you.
Wow, Pete Rocco.
Yeah. Get in.
You look thinner, Pete. Can I go across the street and get you a hot dog?
No, thanks, pal. Right now, I've got my heart set on a little ride. Now get in.
Before we continue with the adventures of Richard Diamond, private detective, here's your Rexall family druggist.
Last week, a customer told me that...
Something I really like about Rexall Milk of Magnesia is that one bottle won't be so thick I can't even pour it, and the next one thin and watery. Somehow, Rexall Milk of Magnesia always seems to be just right.
Well, ma'am, that's because every bottle of Rexall Milk of Magnesia has to meet an exacting standard of viscosity, or it won't wear the Rexall label.
What do you mean by viscosity?
Well, an easy definition would be the degree of thickness in a liquid. Now, Rexall scientists conduct scientifically precise tests on every batch of Rexall Milk of Magnesia to make sure it meets this constant standard of viscosity, because that's one big reason why you'll always get a uniform dosage from every bottle.
Oh, and I thought it was all just an accident.
Oh, no, ma'am. There are no accidents behind the fact. You can always depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
And now back to tonight's adventure with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell. With a gun pointed at me and Pete Rocco at my side, I followed directions and drove to a Harlem address. Pete led me upstairs and into a half-furnished flat.
Far enough. Now sit right here, bright boy.
Yes, sir.
That's good. You know, pal, I've been waiting a long time for this.
And you always were the patient type. What are you waiting for now, Pete? An audience?
Oh, I'm in no hurry. You just sit there and square me for a while.
Who's there?
It's me, Roscoe. Well, hello, Snoopy. Can you beat this guy, Petey? He was looking for you.
Let's not rub it in, boys.
What you waiting for, Petey? Take care of him. Let's beat it.
Shut up. We don't leave till I get word it's all clear to pick up the money.
Yeah, but when are you going to find out? Who's going to let you know?
Don't get too nosy, Roscoe. Diamond, after you picked me up, I had a rough time. During that trial, I didn't know what they were going to throw at me. Life or the chair. Just had to wait. Well, that's what you're going to do. You're going to sit there and you're going to wait. When you're least suspecting it, I'm going to put three slugs through your head.
My barber won't like this.
Yeah, just keep making cracks, wise guy. You'll break before long.
Yeah, you'll break before long.
Is there an echo in here?
Roscoe, did you shake that police tail?
He's still looking for me in the bowling alley.
Good. Tie Diamond up tight and keep an eye on him. I'm going out for a while.
Oh, Pete, you're going to take a chance on getting seen.
Shut up. Been away for 5 years. I'll do what I want. Now tie him up.
Pete kept the gun on me while Roscoe tied my arms behind a chair.
Then he put the gun he had taken from me in his left pocket and his own in his right. He resembled a walking army as he went out the door.
You know, Snoopy, you're not so bad.
Oh, now, watch it, Bosco. You'll hurt my feelings.
Pete's a rough boy. I'm going to enjoy watching him settle with you.
Oh, you have such simple taste. What's in this for you? Pete giving you a cut?
Yeah, if he ever gets around to picking up the dough. He's got to wait until he gets the all-clear signal out.
Oh, so there's someone else in this. Who, Roscoe?
I don't know. If I did, I wouldn't yap to you. No, it's too bad you'll be a corpse soon.
Oh, thanks for the pleasant thought.
No, I mean it. That strike you made at the bowling alley tonight, that just wasn't luck. You got a swell approach.
You think so?
Yeah. That's where I have my trouble, with my approach. But when Pete gives me my cut of the dough, I'm going to buy me an alley and bowl all the time.
Oh, how exciting.
Say, you want to give me a few points?
What?
The approach. Maybe you could help me improve mine, huh? Now, look, this floor is kind of slippery. Now, watch. Now, I always hold the ball like this. You see? I swing it back and approach like this. There. How'd it look to you?
Well, I couldn't see too well from here. Suppose you untie my hands.
Oh, no. You got to stay tied there.
I'm afraid I can't help you then. Come around this side. I can't see through that table.
Oh, all right. Yo, I got it. I'll slide towards you this time.
All right.
There. What do you think of that?
Well, I won't hurt you now.
No, go on. Be brutal.
Well, it's too sloppy, Roscoe. You keep your head up too high.
The head, huh?
Oh, yeah, sure. And keep the head down.
That's right. Ward followed instructions and kept his head down low, just in line with my foot. Chalk up a strike for Diamond. He went down like the number 10 pin. I managed to work my hands up over the back of the chair. Then a few calisthenics and my hands were in front of me, still tied, but free enough to call Walt Levinson on the phone. 15 minutes later, he arrived, put the cuffs on Ward, and untied me.
Hey, you're loose. You know, maybe I should have kept you tied up. You might stay out of trouble then.
You're so considerate, Walt.
I'll put some men around the house. When Pete comes back with...
Uh-oh. Maybe him now.
Otis, bring Roscoe Ward over here.
Come on, Ward.
Ward, you pick up that phone and act like nothing's happened. Hold the receiver so we can hear who's on the line. If you don't, I'll see that the judge throws the book at you.
Hello.
Roscoe?
Yeah. Is this Pete?
Of course, you dope. Who is...
Hey,
wrong?
Oh, no, Pete. No, everything's fine.
You sound funny. You take the phone out and put the receiver in front of Diamond.
Yeah, it's sure, Pete. Yes. He said.
I heard him. Give me that phone. Hello, Pete. Check up to see if I'm comfortable.
How long you been loose, pal?
Come again?
Diamond, I left you in a chair across the room. The phone don't reach that far.
Well, Pete, you're getting smarter.
Yeah, thanks. Too bad I'll have to postpone those 3 slugs in the head. But maybe later.
I'm glad you said maybe, Pete. I have different ideas.
Yeah, we'll see, pal. We'll see.
Well, he tricked us, Walt. He won't be back here.
Does this bird know where he is?
Yeah, I don't think so. Roscoe, you mentioned that Pete had to wait for the word from someone before he could pick up that money. Who is that someone?
I told you before, I don't know.
Look, punk, you're all through. Help us out and you'll get a better deal in court.
Yeah, but if I knew, I'd tell you. All I know is that Pete won't go near the door until this someone gives him the green light.
No.
I think he's telling the truth, Walt. Take him downtown and book him. I'm going visiting. I drove back out Mulberry Street to the Rocco Cigar Store. I was hoping Pete's brother, Dan, might remember some of Pete's old hangouts. I wanted to wrap up this case quickly for 2 reasons. 1, Pete was a killer, might kill again at any minute. And 2, I might be the one he'd killed.
Simon?
Oh, yeah, hello, Danny.
I'm trying to get you in your office. I think I know where Pete is.
So, Mr. Diamond.
I'll tell you later.
I do hope you have something to report.
Well, not much, Mrs. Rocco. I met your son today on the wrong side of a gun. I don't know where he is now.
Oh, well, that's too bad. But you will catch him, I'm sure of that. Peter must be punished. I don't hold with violence, Mr. Diamond.
Ma, don't you want me to drive you over to visit Mrs. Montelli?
Oh, well, that would be nice, Daniel. I'd like that.
Well, you get your wrap and we'll go now.
All right. And Mr. Diamond, remember... I want my son caught quickly.
before he can kill again. Good day.
Now then, Danny, what were you saying about Pete?
I know where you can locate him. I didn't want to talk in front of Ma. I want to get out of this.
Go on.
Pete called me a little while ago. He's coming over tonight. I'm taking Ma to visit a friend, so she'll be out of the way. Tonight's your chance, Diamond. Tonight.
I made plans to meet Danny out in front of the shop around 8, then I went back to my office. I called Helen, booked my dinner date for that evening, and waited as the hours ticked by. 7:30, and I was ready to go. Pete had taken my gun earlier, so I slipped a spare in my pocket and drove to the cigar store. I parked down the street, walked halfway up the block, and met Danny.
Diamond?
Yeah. My boy showed up yet?
No, but he should be here soon. Come on.
We walked up to the shop, and Danny unlocked the door. The shop was dark as I entered, and I tripped over something on the floor.
Hey, can we have some light in here?
Sure. Why not?
That's better.
And then I saw what I tripped over. Pete Rocco with 6 bullet holes in his body. And then it was clear. Why had Pete come here? To get the money. That made the strong-armed boy behind me the contact. The one Pete was waiting for to give him the all-clear was little brother Danny.
Right, Shamus?
I'll be honest. Yes, I am.
Pretty smooth, huh? Here, catch. That's good. You'll notice it's your gun. Pete was bragging about how he took it from you. He let me see it.
And that was fatal.
Right. And this gun I got on you now was Pete's. I kill you, put the gun in Pete's hand, and I'm clear. You shot each other. No one will blame me.
You thought this all out, huh?
That's right. Pete and I robbed that bookie together. He left the dough for me to keep after he was picked up. I figured he'd never get out, but when he did... Well, it's real convenient your being around. Now say your prayers, Samus. This is it.
Is he? Is he dead, Mr. Diamond?
No, you hit him in the shoulder. Better call an ambulance, though.
Yes. My boys, Peter and Daniel, look at them. I tried to teach them. I told them I wouldn't stand for violence. But they wouldn't listen. You know, sometimes you've just got to be stern.
For me, Miss Helen?
Yes, Francis. Will you fix us some drinks, please? Soda with mine.
And you, Mr. Diamond?
No, I'll take soda, too, Francis. About a jiggerful.
Yes, sir.
Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you ever get tired.
Playing the piano? Never.
That's not what I meant. By today, you were almost killed twice.
Honey, you can only be killed once.
All right, then. You were threatened twice. Don't you ever wish you were in a different profession?
For instance?
Oh, insurance, maybe. You can talk fast enough.
Well, you may have something there. Need a lot of gals in the insurance game.
On second thought, you'd be better as a good humor man. Meet a lot of children instead.
Gals are like better.
And so I've noticed.
Oh, hello. What's wrong with my own business? Now, where else could I find excitement all day and a beautiful girl to sing to at night?
Flattery will get you everywhere, Mr. Diamond.
Don't I know it? A little bit independent in your walk. A little bit independent in your talk. There's nothing like you in Paris or New York. You're awfully easy on the eyes. A little bit independent when we dance. A little bit independent towards romance. A bit of sophistication in your glance. And yet you're easy on the eyes. Whenever I'm with you alone, you weave a magic spell. And though it be a danger zone,
I only know that you're swell. A little bit independent with your smile. A little bit independent in your style. How can I help but love you all the while when you're so easy on the eyes?
Rick.
Yes, baby?
I've been wondering which holds more attraction for you. Me or my piano?
Hmm? Oh, come here, baby.
Here's your drink, Mr. Oh! Mr. Diamond. Miss Helen. Oh, dear. Why did I ever leave Cambridge?
Again, here's your Rexall Family Druggist. Whenever you have a headache, remember this about Rexall aspirin. When taken with water, the 5 full grains of pure aspirin in every Rexall tablet are ready to go to work for you even before they reach your stomach. So whenever you have a headache, remember that about Rexall aspirin. Ask for it at Rexall drugstores everywhere. And remember always, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Richard Diamond, private detective, stars Dick Powell in the title role, with music composed and conducted by Frank Wirth. Look for Dick Powell in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, Right Cross, in which he co-stars with June Allison and Ricardo Montalban. Richard Diamond, private detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. This is Bill Foreman inviting you to be with us next week at this time when we will again present Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
You beautiful.
Get lost, Bristlepuss. You need a shave.
But I have shaved. What else do you want me to do?
Silly boy, she wants you to go stag.
Go stag? But why?
Because Stag is Rexall's exclusive line of men's good grooming aids. Like Stag brushless shave cream. No fuss, no massage, just smooth it on and presto, you get a clean, close shave. Your face stays smooth and whiskerless all day long.
I'll do it. Go Stag.
That's it. Join the Stag line now at Rexall drugstores everywhere.
Yes. To make girls care, go Stag.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another one. Between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show, more old-time radio, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. There's also links there to our forum, Shoutcast Stream, Facebook page, and our donate button. All of the Relic Radio shows are made possible by your donations. Thank you very much to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.